All right, everyone, let's get the show started. Welcome to our DevOps office hours. June 16th, 2021. My name is Eric Osterman, and I'll be leading the conversation. I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator, and that means that we help companies own their infrastructure in record time by building it together with your team while showing them the ropes. So if that sounds interesting, head over to cloudposse.com/quiz to get started. Again, that's cloudposse.com/quiz to get started. Our call today is recorded. If you're tuning in from our podcast or YouTube channel, you can register for these live and interactive sessions by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, that's cloudposse.com/office hours. We host these calls every week. We'll automatically post a video recording of this session to our YouTube channel, as well as follow up with an email so you can share it with your team. Today, we have another special edition of Office Hours. We have a familiar face joining us. Taylor is a developer advocate, a senior developer advocate from HashiCorp. And I've seen him around the LA area all the time at frequent DevOps meetups and conferences. He was formerly at Disney, having a pretty pivotal role there in their cloud transformation and worked with Terraform for countless years. Anyways, he's going to be sharing a little bit behind the scenes of maybe what's going on with Terraform and HashiCorp and answer any of the questions that we have here. Pretty much everyone on the call is a prominent user of Terraform. So we don't need to go into any introductions here on who HashiCorp is or what is Terraform. We can skip over all that. So Taylor works specifically with open source communities like SweetOps and is passionate about Kubernetes, Terraform, and solving the complex distributed problems that we all deal with. The managed chaos, what we do, right, Michael? So you can find Taylor buried usually deep in a book on Kubernetes problems. Preparing a technical talk or running with his partner, Anna, and two pups, sometimes doing all three at the same time. Now, as for HashiCorp, we don't need to introduce that. So before we start, I just want to lay out the format here. The call is different from our traditional format. I'm going to drive a casual conversation here with Taylor, and feel free to jump in to ask any questions along the way. Let's try and hold maybe some of the bigger questions. I mean, honestly, we don't really have too much of an agenda today other than we're just going to get the conversation started here. So let's dive right into it. So Taylor, I'd like to start by asking you a qualifying question. I mean, we got to get your pedigree or your street cred established here. So before you were a senior developer advocate, what were you actually doing?
So before being a developer advocate, it was kind of the, it's funny thinking back through all the years and thinking about all of the things I did leading up to this moment. You know, I finally had that epiphany where I was like, oh my gosh, developer advocacy, that'd be so much fun to do. Uniting all of the things that I really enjoy about the software development process, application delivery, et cetera. Before working at HashiCorp as a developer advocate, I worked at Disney and worked with the operations team, the SRE team, and kind of worked at bringing things from more of a reactionary, hey, my Wi-Fi is not working, things like that were going on. The server was working yesterday, to things that were a little bit more thought out and setting up monitoring, responding to alerts, things like that, but also being mindful of alert fatigue and some other things there. But while working at Disney, really, really fun job. The only drawback to that is it's Disney. And so you can't really talk about everything. You have to get everything cleared from legal. And so with that respect, by the time that you might get something cleared, it might be, it might be kind of a stale concept or topic. And so that was something that always kind of bummed me out. I loved talking with teams internally and working with people to solve problems, but always wanted to talk publicly about some of those things. So really excited to go do that now.
Environments like that where you work on cool things, but you can't tell anybody about it because it's confidential. That's why you work for Cloud Posse, by the way. Just a pitch here. We are hiring. Okay, go on.
It's been interesting to see how some companies like Apple and Google have kind of gotten around that too, because a lot of people working in the artificial intelligence space want to submit their research to different peer review processes and get the word out there, go to trade shows. I know that one workaround for some Apple employees was, instead of having the Apple logo, having just Apple as the word typed out. So there's some interesting, that also kind of fascinates me, is like, how do you kind of say yes to all of the parties, to legal, to your teams and things like that. Yeah. That's concept for another time, but I always find that really interesting too.
That is interesting. So that is a good reason why you would make the jump. You were tired of having, you couldn't talk about all these cool things. You wanted to get to an environment where you could and get out and meet with people. So as a senior developer advocate, what does that actually mean, I guess? What is your job at HashiCorp day to day?
So honestly, I get to have a lot of fun every single day. So a lot of my days are there. Some of the job is, you know, taking a look at what conferences are coming up and submitting CFPs and kind of thinking about interesting talks that I might be able to give or deliver with a couple other people. And so that's a lot of fun. I'd say that's more of the structured side to what it is being a developer advocate. But what I delight in a lot is creating demos to solve a certain use case, you know, somebody coming with a really, you know, like hair pulling problem, like, I don't know how to fix this. I don't know how to solve this. And being able to be like, I don't either. Do you mind if I work on this with you? Let's talk about this and kind of like deconstruct the problem and solve each of the little pieces.
You get to figure out like the hard part, but you don't have to carry it over to the line. It's going to see it through the production.
Not exactly.
But it is like being sandboxed a little bit.
Get it to a good place and then cheerlead, you know, the rest of the way. Yeah. I'm always happy to do, but it's even working at Disney and some other companies that I've worked at in the past, it's been like it's kind of like working, the metaphor I use is like working in a restaurant where they're really great restaurants. You know how to make their signature dishes and work with their systems. And working at HashiCorp has been interesting because it's like, now you get to take a tour around the city and find out how everyone makes their special things and, you know, talk with them back and forth, bring feedback back to the product teams and say, hey, you know, like, hey, somebody raised this up. Is this something that we're going to work on? Or, and then, you know, sometimes hearing like, you know, no, and being able to give that feedback, or like, that's a really good idea. And being able to incorporate that with the products is also equally, I found that more fun than the no answer in some cases.
But it's such a hard thing at HashiCorp or any open source project. We literally have tens of thousands of loud mouths, my own included, like saying, we need this, we want this. How the hell does a company like HashiCorp prioritize that across all of their products? And does working with a developer advocate help us get our voice out in any way?
Definitely. I think that really proving out, I think the thing that in kind of goes beyond developer advocacy too, is really just kind of being able to have that repeatable thing. You know, if you submit a bug ticket or something like that, or feature request, having an idea of how that's going to work and being able to pose that as a way that is, you know, compelling and kind of doesn't require a lot of a feedback loop, you know, because if it's like, I want Terraform to deliver me pizza every Friday at 3 p.m. That's probably possible. I know it's possible. But being able to include that as a feature, or like, well, why do you want this? What problems does it solve? What do you want to do here is kind of the, you know, summing that up is really helpful. Or, you know, if it's a bug or something like that too, having a demo that shows exactly like, hey, here's a repeatable example, it becomes easier once you kind of get everything structured and ready to hand off to someone else to take a look at or get feedback on. That's always helpful too.
So I wanted to get into a pretty interesting question asked by Michael Jenkins earlier in the Slack here. But before I do, I just wanted to kind of set it up before we get into it or add a little bit more context. And that was, so HashiCorp basically invented the category from my perspective of infrastructure as code, the way, like, it was CloudFormation before Hashi and Terraform came out, but this concept of being able to do it declaratively across clouds, across providers, was pretty novel. So Michael was asking here, so one of the capabilities now of using the cloud developer kit from AWS is that they have the CDK for Terraform now. And he's asking, what are the benefits now of using CDK for Terraform over vanilla Terraform? I understand the case for using a programming language as a developer, and as a developer who might be more familiar with it, would like that more than Terraform. But is there any other huge benefit to the CDK that might be overlooked by someone already using Terraform? I guess a good way of also reframing this is, how do you sell CDK to a person already sold on Terraform as a language? Also, are there any anti-patterns that can be avoided by someone just starting out with the CDK? Now, this was a question not prepared, so I understand if you don't have a full answer for it, but what's your take on this?
So I think with the CDK for Terraform, I've used it for a couple of use cases. I'm very much sold on vanilla Terraform. That's just my personal workflow, you know, with creating demos and other things like that. I've transitioned from working at Disney, where something might need to be supported for 5 to 10 years, kind of to something that I'd like to keep updated, you know, every couple of months, things like that. So in that specific context, I really like vanilla Terraform, and have started to look at CDK for a couple different things, with my own setup and just things I want to test. I'd say the CDK for Terraform is interesting because it does meet you where you're at. If you're someone that really enjoys using your, you know, whether it be Python or TypeScript, or as of this latest release, Go, you know, support is in beta. So really, if that's your language, absolutely recommend check it out, because it is pretty cool. Just had an office hours with the team just a couple weeks back, which also definitely worth checking out on YouTube. I think that's really the benefit, is that if it fits your workflow, and I know it's a it depends answer, which is, as technologists, our favorite answer to give, but also the least fun one to receive. You know, it's like, great, I don't, you know, like, I'd like a little bit more of an opinion, please, in some cases. I think it really just meets you where you're at. If that is your workflow, if it's your workflow to work within vanilla Terraform, by all means, that, you know, if that makes sense for you and your team, that's absolutely what you should be doing. If you're looking for some ways in which it might differ, it is interesting because you can kind of package that into a specific a type of workflow that you might have, or an operator, or something like that. Depending on how the infrastructure is set up at your organization or with your team. There are other things too, like the Terraform operator for Kubernetes, which links with Terraform Cloud and can, you know, spin things up within the Kubernetes context. So that's one thing I really like about HashiCorp, is that no matter how you perform your workloads and your workflows, we try to meet you where you're at. And so if there is anything that you...
Anybody combined those two yet? CDK for TF with the Terraform operator for Kubernetes?
I haven't yet. That's one thing I've actually got to take a look at, that, because that'd be fun. It's like having all the infinity stones of infrastructure together.
Yeah. With Waypoint. I want to see that. Topic for another. We are going to have Taylor on, by the way, more often. So expect demos of like Waypoint and Boundary coming up as well. But today we're just wetting everybody's appetite for what he has to bring here. I'd like to add my two cents, though, on the question as well, which is that I think, first of all, CDK for TF sounded a lot more awesome if it had come out pre 0.12 of HCL, HCL2, when HCL was a lot more static and less flexible. And honestly, maybe that could have been a totally separate path in an alternate universe. HashiCorp never came out with HCL2, and we went down this generator pattern of using something like CDKTF. I would say a frequent argument is that, hey, we know Python, that's why we want to use Python for Terraform. And conceptually, in principle, this is beautiful. But in reality, you're not going to find all your examples in Python for everything you want to do. You're going to be niching it down to a small set of users who want to use this pattern that you're going for, and you're setting yourself up for a world of hurt, because it's not going to be as well tested as all these other examples. you're basically working something that's going to be transcompiled to something else and then executed. So when you're debugging something, you're debugging it at more layers. And also one of the arguments for using a proper language is using a debugger. And that debugger, yeah, I guess it's going to work, but it's not going to help you debug your problems in your Terraform code. So it's going to help you debug the transcompilation to Terraform, but that's probably not where your problem is to get in the get-go. So I think it's arguing it on like this purist point of view, and companies that are saying, hey, we're a Python shop, we only do Python, I think it's a limiting belief, and that different, you know, you use the best tool for the job.
Absolutely agree. I think it's that strong opinions, loosely held kind of mentality I find is best. And, you know, if it is the best tool for the job and suits your workflow, and absolutely, you should absolutely try it. There's some things that I'll use in certain contexts that just won't work anywhere else. You know, if I try eating a soup with a fork, but you know, it's not gonna, it doesn't mean the fork's bad, but it's just not for that meal. It's not for that workflow.
Yeah. That's a good point. All right, let's see here. Do we have some questions pop up in the Zoom chat here? I want to get to everyone else. Rizky Ramadan asks, I want to ask, doesn't Terraform... I need to read this here a little bit. Solving problem if I have a dynamic public cloud, for example, I can easily move them. Yeah, so Terraform doesn't really solve that problem. Like, hey, I write my Terraform code once, and now I can deploy my cloud to Google and Amazon at the same time. That's not really the use case. But Taylor, I'll let you talk to that one a little bit.
I think it's an interesting conversation. I'm personally really excited for, I feel like we're getting closer to that point where it's just like, I need compute, I need storage, I need these things, I need networking, you know, like just these very generic concepts. And then having the cloud or the framework or system kind of figure that out for you. I think that in the future, that's absolutely something I'd really like to see. But right now it's like, you know, even deciding what EC2 instance you might use in Amazon, how does that, you know, how does that translate to what's offered in GCP? Yeah. Is it Fargate? Is it this? Is it, how does it act? You know, like there are all those extra questions that a lot of people have to solve. And that's why it's still at this place where it's not multi-cloud.
It would make Terraform overly opinionated as well, in a way that I think Terraform's done a really good job of stepping out of our way, like Cloud Posse. We have our opinion way to how we write our modules, but that isn't impacted by how HashiCorp writes its resources or providers. So to answer, I think, this question, and then another way would be to say that it's the job of the modules themselves. And if you write two modules, one for GCP, one for AWS, and you as the author choose to make your inputs the same, you're going to get basically a very pluggable way to deploy for both clouds. But that's, you have to write that module for both, and few people are doing that. Yeah, that's a good question. So that's actually a great segue to a question I had. Like, so where Terraform is today, we're very close to this iceberg, and sometimes I think it's hard to lose vision for what is it actually going to look like 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Is it just going to be a much broader provider landscape and ecosystem, basically a provider for everything, which it already feels like we have that right now. But how do we think further than where it is today? I mean, I would say, you know, arguably Pulumi is, you know, definitely creating some competition for Terraform. And I wouldn't say CDK, TF as much, but where do you see HashiCorp responding to these external threats?
So I think it's interesting. I like looking at seeing the different ways that teams do things, you know, even when it comes to CloudFormation, like where are areas where this is better? Why is this better in this way? And then trying to, you know, raise those questions within the community, find out if it's ways that could be beneficial, find out if it might just be a difference of, you know, again, context. Does this make sense in this context? Does it not? And so that's what I find really fun when some people might be worried. I find that fun. That's something I also like about working at HashiCorp is we don't shy away from those difficult questions. And, you know, it's like, yeah, let's talk about what makes that better and kind of figure out, you know, how we might be able to make Terraform better or find out what works for you in your workflow. So I think that's a long way to say, I find it very interesting. I like to stay curious on things like that and kind of see what they have to offer.
Yeah, no, thank you for adding that. I think competition is good in this space. Hoping to get a more more clear idea kind of what we can. Is there some place where we can go to get I mean, obviously we all love and are excited about like Terraform 1.0 and the potential, but is there any other place to look for like a more public roadmap to get excited about for Terraform or HashiCorp products?
I think that's a great question. I don't know of a singular place to take a look. I know that there are a lot of good sources within the community. I know that like learn.hashicorp.com is really good and kind of understanding the things that have just come out recently, and then kind of seeing some of the thoughts around how certain tools, you know, all of HashiCorp's tools or workflows are, you know, thought of to work. You know, what's the happy path for getting these things up and running and working? And then honestly, I'd say discuss.hashicorp.com is also another great site that you can take a look at, interact with other. It will post a lot of like surveys and questions and things like that up on that site as well. And then I have seen today I saw I'm seeing some questions around like Terraform import as well. And that's one thing I've really got to focus on for 1.1 and in the future, wherever that lands, and kind of making those things better. But there is I think one of my colleagues has a link in Reddit right now about like, hey, do you want to talk about Terraform import? If so, find me, you know, here's my calendar. Let's set up some time to talk. So I think that's, you know, so kind of staying tuned into those channels as surveys and other things come up. Sometimes we tweet those out. And then I would also say checking out HashiCorp has community office hours as well. And so we'll do that for all of the products, whether it be Waypoint, whether it be Terraform, and then different teams will come on and be able to talk about certain things. Like we'll have Terraform community office hours specifically with the, you know, Terraform provider SDK. And Terraform plugin SDK, you know, and we'll be able to talk about those things, or the AWS provider, or, you know, and so those are
these
really
micro
great times.
Community groups or focus groups on it. One of the things that I'm curious about with HashiCorp would be, I don't know how to set it up. It's a big one, but, I feel like HashiCorp is they're in public view, but a little bit in stealth corp mode almost, where we have all these public clouds out there. We got Amazon, GCP, AliCloud, Azure, et cetera, and they've all kind of followed the Amazon model where you build a platform, you sell it, you get big corps on it, and you lock them in for years at a time. And then you have HashiCorp, which has taken this really unconventional approach. I think it's rad where you've built all these products. It's almost like, you know, Mongo created MongoDB, or Atlas created MongoDB, or whatever it is now. But and then eventually came out with their hosted cloud offering and then felt the competition from Amazon. But what you guys are doing is you're creating like every one of these little cloud products, giving it away as open source. Hey, you run with it. You self-host it. You figure it out. But now coming out with your own cloud platform where you from the ground up are building a hybrid where, hey, you can always self-host and run this stuff if you want, or you can pay us to do it. I guess I'm curious on HashiCorp's perspective is, you know, where I wonder what percent, this is probably not something you can answer, but like, I wonder what percentage of their reinvestment will go into their cloud offering versus new products and maintaining current ones, et cetera, when the big money is probably in the cloud hosting.
I had that conversation a lot is, you know, people ask, you know, I've had family members that and friends that aren't in the technology space. They're just curious. They've heard about open source. You know, they equate that with the word free. And then they say, how does your company make money? You know, like, and valid question. And really it is that it's, you know, you can pull this all down. We've built a really strong company on open source, which is not something that you see a lot of companies be able to pull off. I'm really stoked that all the luck and the timing and just kind of everything lined up.
It all came together. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah, Terraform Apply. Here we are. being able to take that and then say, you know what? It is like a Disney, or I worked in the healthcare space. I worked at American Greetings and other places. Wouldn't you just want to focus on your core competencies? Do you really want to focus on logins and orchestration frameworks and infrastructure as code frameworks? Do you really want to do that? Do you really want to run that? If you do, you know, absolutely. Here are all the tools. Here's the best practices on how to do that. And then, you know, but making those tools, we know all of its rough edges. We know, you know, what workflows might work best. And so we feel like we're able to run it best because, you know, we made it here. We should be able to run it best as well and kind of open up that possibility for others to take a look at things, offer critiques and say, this is great, this is not, and kind of give that feedback too. And so I think that's kind of I see that as the best way forward, like getting to a point where people are like, I just want to use Terraform. Let me just pull down Terraform Cloud. You know, you'd start with a free account, see if this makes sense for me. And then if it doesn't, you know, continue on. Let me just keep my S3 bucket or my storage bucket. And I've got a workflow. I've got GitLab CI. I'm fine using that. That's totally cool to do too. I think that all of our products allow you to grow with them and scale with them. So if you do have a bigger budget, if you do need those enterprise features, if you are on those kinds of teams, you can go in that direction. But, you know, finding, I think that's part of the journey is like figuring out what is right for you at the right time. You know, and making sure it's not too early or too late. You know, I feel like it's never too late, but I'm biased. you know, trying to figure out where you are in that journey is really important.
What tools within HashiCorp, like I'm biased, or, you know, I'm not biased. Well, I'm definitely biased, but I am blinded because I mostly work with Terraform. So to me, everything is the end all be all Terraform. But where is most of the growth in the business? Is it still on Terraform, or maybe it never was? Is it a console? Is it, where is most of the growth happening?
I think I'm kind of biased as well. I've really like zeroed in on my favorite products. I like all the products, but I think the ones I've got most experience with are Terraform and are Waypoint. I've used console here and there. I've used Vault here and there. I've used Boundary. I've used all of these tools, but I think that on my radar, I'm just really focused on Terraform and Waypoint. Okay. Waypoint, you know, kind of being new to the party, but I think that I think of all the questions I get asked, a lot of them pertain to Terraform and Vault because those are really core things in kind of getting your infrastructure stood up, and then including console and or Nomad and are these other things later. It's kind of like a multiplier effect. As people start to add on things, you start to see that grow a little bit.
So I wanted to shift gears to ask a couple questions from the chat here. Two kind of related ones. Thane asks, what would be your ideal image factory? Of course, using Terraform, or I guess compatible with Terraform, but Packer, but other. So I'm not exactly sure how to frame that into a question that wouldn't be just saying Packer. Taylor, was there something that you'd like to add or reframe your question there?
Yeah, I think that to answer your question, Thane, I think that I do think it would be Packer and Terraform. I think in my perfect world scenario, it would be having the ability to kick off a Terraform run and to have a Packer file. And I love that Packer supports HCL now too. The Packer team is all of the HashiCorp team is incredible. I have immense respect though for Terraform Core and the Packer teams. You know, as of late, I've really gotten to work with them closely. and see them think like, how do we, again, how do we make this better? And seeing them add in HCL as a method that is supported and the recommended way of working with Packer now, being able to have data sources and adding on to those is making it a lot better. And so as that gets to, you know, Packer gets to 2.0, I'm really excited to see all the things that get added in. It feels like these are all the features that have kind of like been brewing in the background and are finally ready to come to fruition. And so I think that's my ideal workflow, is being able to have Terraform kick everything off instead of, you know, having my Packer repository here, spin up the image, and then later on, you know, Terraform, look for this tag, spin this up that way. It, having it all together, I would ideally be the way I'd like to do it. But right now, perform those separately.
I feel like I saw something out of the corner of my eye, but maybe it was just a brain fart. Was there a HCP offering coming out for Packer?
How
does that work? What is that about?
So right now TLDR is the team still working on it. Right now there's a beta that you can sign up for, but right now it's kind of, it's the first HCP offering for Packer HashiCorp Cloud Platform. If you haven't heard HCP, it's not my new music group. It's a way to take a look at the metadata of the images that you build. And so you can see in an organization when something is outdated, if there's a security vulnerability, what needs to we need to update these images over here, and kind of getting a better sense of what's going on. So that's very much still in flux, still being worked on, but very, very, so, I'm really stoked about that.
So it's kind of like a registry of some kind almost for your images in a cross cloud portable way.
Exactly.
Wow.
It's a reference point, mostly focused on that metadata of those images, not so much focused on storage or anything like that.
But. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. And therefore there can now be a provider that works with that and ties better into the lifecycle management stuff you get with Terraform. And with this offering, is there going to be a free tier, and what does that look like?
That I would assume so. I don't know though, to be clear, it just as it's getting developed, I'd happy to share more as I learn more about it too. But yeah. I'm also really excited to, you know, to take a swing and actually see what the team comes up with. But all of the announcements and mockups and everything on that front are looking pretty cool. I definitely recommend checking out. It's the day two HashiConf keynote. If you haven't checked that out yet, definitely recommend doing so. Okay. There's a lot of good tidbits in there.
Very cool. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that and bring it up again. Related to that, Michael Jenkins, Managed Chaos, asks, related to kind of like the image factory question, can you also comment on the removal now of certain provisioners like Chef? That seems like an opinionated change. Any comment on that?
That was something that I was really interested in, or I was really surprised.
Can you set it up first? Like explain what happened for everyone who's not necessarily aware. Yeah.
Absolutely. So when you work with Terraform, there were some provisioners that were available. So whether you wanted to run Ansible, if you wanted to run Chef, if you wanted to run Puppet, those were stubs available in Terraform to then kick off your playbooks and all of your different plans, which really nice. You know, either you can solve that in Packer or you can take care of that with Terraform. You know, say if you're spinning up a known image, a golden image, and then you want to do some configuration management after the fact, there's a provider for that. That got taken out because the team started to look at that and realize that, you know, we have remote exec and local exec as, you know, two supported options. Those made it through that cut. Otherwise, we didn't want to create something that was, you know, at that point in time, it doesn't scale where you have, you know, like 10 different ways to do configuration management. You can just generally use local or remote exec to handle those kinds of use cases was the thought. I'm working with a coworker on a project for Nomad and kind of getting up and running. And that's how we broke it up too. Like we wanted to use Ansible for that. We thought that was a really good way to take care of that image. And so we have a Packer and Ansible repository that will kick off all of those processes. And so that's, so still, you know, personally, I love Ansible and being able to use that for my configuration management tool. And for us, it was kind of like finding the right fit for that. and kind of rethinking how we were going to do that. So I had something else there, but it escaped me, and I'm sure I'll come back in a second.
Yeah, what, if you are affected by that deprecation and are finding it difficult to achieve some of the same things, one of the things that we've found some luck for with is using the Terraform shell provider, which is the ultimate escape hatch, where if you don't want to drop down into Go and write your own provider, this gives you, I think I pasted the wrong thing in there. This gives you the hooks into the various life cycles that you'd be able to tie into just by using a Terraform provider that calls a shell script. So it's a lot more powerful than your local exec because you can tie into the life cycles of create, read, update, delete specifically. And it's still undergoing active development. It was updated a few months ago.
That was the thing that came to mind was kind of as you see these things change and just kind of like the dust settle on some offerings, it's one, it caused us to kind of rethink our DA team. You know, we took a beat and we said, how does this change things? Can we kind of rethink how we actually get things set up if we don't have these provisioners available to us?
Yeah.
And so we have an interesting setup where, like, for that Nomad project, we have Packer and Ansible running in one repository. We have another set of repositories we're working on where it's going to set it up for GCP, AWS, Azure, and some other clouds. And then lastly, a Terraform module that just written in Terraform that generates a template based on Nomad configuration. And we really want to do that with the other products as well. And so kind of having that use case where you're able to kind of, instead of solve it all as one together, mm-hmm. break it up and then solve it in different pieces yeah. when it's necessary. And then you have more pluggability on that front too, is one thing that we've done. And I'm really curious if y'all have any other experiences or if you're like, but I need this kind of workflow to work this way. I'd love to hear those use cases from you. Please at me, whether it be on Twitter or anywhere else. I'd love to hear your use cases and talk with you through those.
Yeah, that was good. Also, I'd like to add just some op-ed on that. I bet a strong reason for that happening when it did how it did was like HashiCorp was gearing up for the 1.0 release here, and they had to probably make some hard decisions. Do we want to continue to support this now? If we're going 1.0, we've publicly put our head over the line saying that we're going to support it. Do we want to do that? I'm guessing they wanted to make it pretty... they had to make the decision now or never.
Exactly. There were a lot of difficult conversations, I think, and most of them public. That's, again, I kind of like that decision process in solving those things. But that a lot of things there, as well as some nice like bolts getting tightened too, with like less than exciting things like logging and structured logging and kind of like things on that front too, which I love to nerd out about logging and kind of those different things. But
actually, that's an interesting one from my perspective. And I will get to your question next, Andy, right after this. I was just wondering, Terraform is evolving quite seriously into a full-fledged language, and for it really to get that honor, it needs a debugger pretty soon. And you have a REPL now, I guess, and how is it going to get easier to debug these really complex deep stacks managed with Terraform?
So, such a great question. I can't wait to see the answer to that question as time goes. But I think that support for structured logging and like there's that ability now for modules and providers to be able to share that information as you go and build it and as you update your SDK for your provider. I think that's going to be interesting. A lot of the now that we've hit 1.0, I feel like that now we can start to focus on a lot of problems like Terraform import and generating configuration as it comes to generating debugging information as you're building a provider.
Yeah.
As the Terraform plugin SDK gets to 3.0, I feel like it's an interesting time. It's 1.0 typically means boring for a lot of projects, which in a good way. It's, we figured it out, it's done, it's supported, it's good to go. But I feel like now, you know, getting it to 1.0 was interesting. I feel like getting to 2.0 over the years, months, years, days to come is going to also be an interesting transition. And I'm curious to see what it brings. But now that 1.0 is out the door, that those conversations I feel are starting to get kicked up a little bit more, where we talk about what do we want to do next? And that's always an interesting conversation.
One thing I think is fascinating, it's such a minor point, but I just think it's fascinating for a product that's mature, that two constructs it doesn't yet support officially, natively, would be any kind of debug output. Like when you're writing something, you can come up with some hacks and local exec that echoes and that, but there's no first class way to output any debug information that could be kept anymore. Two would be any kind of exception handling or ability to, try kind of is that way, but anyway, to throw an exception, break execution if some condition happens. Validation, kind of there, not really. Do you know any more about that? Why that isn't supported?
I think that is a big thing, just testing in general is kind of what I equate that to. And
yeah, could be.
I know that the team is working on Terraform test and currently running some experiments on that front to kind of see, okay, this is how I expect to stamp this infrastructure or something like that. Once you're using, this kind of focused more on the infrastructure as code perspective and not so much on the providers themselves. I feel like providers have a little bit better stubbing on things like that, but most people aren't building a provider. Most people are trying to spin up infrastructure as code. And I think that's kind of where that's where I want to see that go. The Terraform test direction is kind of being able to give those that feedback back to you. I remember there was a couple of months back where I was working on a demo and I was just having a bear of a time trying to get this thing to work. And I was using Terraform Cloud. I'd kick off my run. 30 minutes later, it would just end because that was the window that it has to execute.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, what the heck? This is not that complicated. What's going on? And it turned out it was because of the way I was authenticating to AWS. And there was a flag that I could flip on, at least in Terraform Cloud, to be able to see like, oh, it's retrying to sign in with my session credentials. And that wasn't apparent, right? It was retrying. That should work. And in most cases, it would, if it was a network issue, something like that. But if your credentials are expired, it wasn't giving the information at that time.
I've run into that. Yeah.
And then you let the team know, like, oh, hey, and kind of, but yeah, I've been bit by that too. Being able to have console log or better options, is always appreciated when trying to debug that. It's frustrating get into that.
I always say any self-respecting developer would be more verbose. We've all been there. What the hell does this error message mean? Error.
Yeah, it's not descriptive.
Exactly. Or just retrying or whatnot. The more the better in my book. So I want to get to a question from the community. Andrew Roth is a regular here on Office Hours, and he asks an interesting question. As someone who builds demos for a living, can you talk a little bit about your approach to maintaining demos for the long term? I found that demos, both in open source software and in my own company, frequently get outdated and sometimes even cause more confusion due to people being led down a path that isn't necessarily current anymore.
Yes, that's one of my biggest pet peeves, and I've been there. I've done it myself. I've tried to use demos where I get everything spun up and stood up and start executing things, and then it doesn't work. And I go look at the commits and didn't realize it was 4 years ago was the latest one. But I feel like everybody's been there. You find the tool you need, and then it's not what you wanted. With that, I've found being overly opinionated on your Terraform versioning, specifying the specific version in which that works. I do have a lot of updating to do for 1.0 specifically, but providing all the way down to the, bug fix level with semantic versioning, like 12.0.1, making sure I pin to exactly that version has been something that's helped me. In the past, I used to use a little bit looser versioning, like minor version should be okay. And in most cases it is, but in sometimes you find that it might not be as well. So kind of being more specific in pinning my provider's versions, Terraform version, et cetera, that has been the best, that's led to the best outcomes for me. Cause then I don't have to keep that demo up to date as much as I would have to.
Yeah.
So that's helpful. Ideally, I like that. Honestly, I think that just kind of having those demos on like a time frame or just putting it on a calendar, like, hey, it's time to update this demo. I love when Kelsey Hightower goes in and says, you know what? We have a new release of Kubernetes. Kubernetes the hard way is getting an update. You know, like that kind of
that's amazing.
Dedication.
But I got to hope that he has some summer interns working for him.
It's a lot to do. I feel like also picking good use cases are like, it's hard to beat a demo like that, right? It's hard to beat an experience like that.
Yeah, the use cases alone that aren't too contrived and yet that you can do in a short amount of time and don't take hours to do. It's hard.
Yeah. One of my favorite provider examples is the Domino's pizza provider. And so, which does need some updates. It didn't work. Last time I ran it was this December, or previous year, December. And it definitely needed a little bit of work and shine and polish in terms of getting it to work flawlessly. But things like that, maybe we can do something with OPA and with Domino's again here soon.
Has anyone seen any official response from Domino's Pizza on what they think about that provider and like the 30 minutes or less? And if that, it's true.
I haven't seen anything on that front, actually. I know that I think it was someone from somebody from Google that worked on that, if I'm not mistaken, and kind of like just using a service that went and carried that forward. I've seen a couple other like Alexa skills and things like that have been able to kind of trigger that too. But pizza APIs have been hard to come by, honestly. I haven't seen many out there either.
Yeah, no, we had to deal with that, which is a perfect segue to Matt Gowie. Matt Gowie's been writing a lot of our docs and had to come up with some contrived examples. We ended up using weather APIs and location services, and that was kind of effective. His question though, Matt Gowie asks, and I'm going to set it up before I ask it. So, you know, one of the best practices, at least in the broader Terraform community, I don't know if HashiCorp has come out and said it exactly this way, but is you want smaller root components, reducing your blast radius. They do one thing well, decoupling life cycles, making changes less dramatic. The bad thing, and one of the things Terraform is amazing at is calculating the DAG and figuring out the relationship of changes in components. But as soon as you suddenly follow this quote unquote best practice, you are left out out high and dry on how to implement that on your own, basically re-implementing your own poor implementation of Terraform's DAG implementation. Many people have gone down this road, hey, easy, I'll figure this out. I'm just gonna do this as my weekend project. I'm gonna look at the Terraform graph and do this. And then they realize, oh no, this is gnarly. So question from Matt Gowie is, do you ever see HashiCorp creating a layer above Terraform to orchestrate many root modules, deal with this problem of the DAG? I believe a lot of us in the Terraform community run into that problem once you've been in Terraform for a while. So I'm interested if there are any thoughts there.
I would be interested to see that. I think that suggesting an architecture, like, you know, having that, for lack of a better word, like kind of laboratory dust free kind of, you know, thought about how to use a tool or something like that, doesn't always fit with every workflow. And so I feel like that's worth solving, honestly. I think that at some point in time, it will be good to solve that problem. But I think right now I get the sense of kind of breaking things into almost microservices and then versioning them appropriately, but it becomes a bit of a management problem, especially when you have, you know, hundreds of modules that you're using and then even more, you know, pieces of infrastructure that you've stood up. I think that it's almost like I really would like to see a good example. I have not found one where it's easy to set things up. And then it's like, oh, we had this new module come out. Can we guarantee that this is going to be pushed out to everywhere? You know, right now it's like, that's kind of updating things almost by hand. And which is a less than awesome experience. It might make sense on a smaller team or smaller bits of infrastructure, but when you have thousands of things, you know, and that multiplier effect, it can be a little bit more difficult.
So I guess the answer I was kind of hoping for was yes.
In fact, yeah,
Nomad is where that's going. One day, Nomad is going to be this abstract graph engine resolver DAG builder for these things, and you'll be able to plug it all into Nomad. But I don't know if that is.
I do take back my answer a little bit, because that's something that I've had really good conversations on lately with people in the community and some coworkers, is about where do we draw the line with Terraform? We talked a little bit before about configuration management.
Yeah.
Is Terraform the best place to solve that? Terraform is supposed to be declarative. So you're going to have configuration drift or something like that, most likely, when you're trying to pair those two things together. And so by separating that and being mindful of it, so like using Terraform to spin up a Kubernetes cluster and then using Flux to version things within your cluster, maybe that's a better fit for you. And, you know, Terraform, like I love finding conventional and unconventional ways to use Terraform, but by being able to draw that line in the sand and say like, no, I only want Terraform to do this much. I'm going to use this other tool to complete this workflow, to run my security scans, to do these things. I think that's where you see a lot of the benefit, is trying to find the edge and not with computing necessarily.
So that actually makes me think of something else I've been ruminating on for some time. So Kubernetes brings to the table a brilliant concept of operators, at least in an idealistic sense. Anybody who's had to work with operators in production realizes that there's a lot left to be desired. Upgrading operators is cumbersome, if not terrifying, depending on what they're doing. But fundamentally, what an operator is doing is the job of what a human operator would be doing, but in an automated, codified fashion. So if you are deploying like MongoDB to a Kubernetes cluster, you can have an operator that has the business logic and the smarts that knows what that process should look like, working on the primitives underneath there. So like deployments and stateful sets and secrets and config maps, and it's aware of all those, can manipulate them and work with them. Terraform, I've often thought of writing a provider kind of like your operator. And you could write a custom provider to do something complex like a Kubernetes operator. But there is a difference. And with the Kubernetes operator, it has access to those underlying primitives that it can use, of like deployments or other custom resources or things like that. But when you're dealing with a Terraform provider, you really only have access, my understanding, and I don't know the details enough, but to that provider's, or to Terraform's exposed APIs. So you couldn't write a provider that helped you do an EKS blue green upgrade with business logic. And we're getting to the point where doing so much fundamentally difficult stuff with infrastructure as code that it goes beyond what we can just do in a very primitive CRUD model. We need an operator pattern with Terraform. Have you ever heard this talked about? Is there some POCs or pilots going on?
Definitely. So that's even one of the recommendations right now for working with a Kubernetes provider, is separating out your configuration from the code that you use to spin up the cluster. Because when you do that, you see this in some cases, it can cause your Terraform state to become outdated based on, you know, if your managed service is updating the credentials, which they're wont to do. And then you go to say run an upgrade or something like that. And then it tries to tie that back to the Terraform state, and then, oh, your Helm chart won't deploy. Oh, it can cause the opportunity for things to get out of band, out of sync. And so by separating that, you know, making sure that your Kubernetes configuration and kind of like your setup stuff is in this module over here or in this context over here. And then just standing up that cluster is a great way to kind of combat that kind of outcome and is the recommended approach for doing so as well. And so I think that's been a really interesting way in which people have solved that problem, as well as some others where like, yeah. Does it make sense to track, you know, like auto scaling groups? Does it make sense to track the, you know, the current amount or the desired amount? In some cases, no, you know, you don't want to scale in from, you know, you've spun up 1,000 batch jobs and you're running this update and you scale it down back to 3 to burst back out, you know, it doesn't make sense to do that. So some of the lifecycle hooks and tracking, you know, things like, I don't care if this changes is also some interesting ways I've seen around that, but I'm curious to see as we go on if there's going to be a more definitive approach to solving that problem.
I can't help but think sometimes that in Terraform, part of its success is in a contradiction that it's good at doing a lot of things, but so bad at many other things. But that it activates the hacker's instinct. I can figure this out. And I want to find this really crazy workaround that you spend, you know, a day on with 3 lines of code, and you figure out how to make Terraform do what you wanted to do. But it would just be so easy if we were just using a proper language. Anyways,
it's true, and to me, I find that really fun. That's the day job that I love to have.
Yeah, paid to find. Yeah, problems or solutions to what should be easy problems. All right. Niraj Palecha asks a interesting question. This is probably the last one we can get to here since we're basically out of time or already out of time. But what are your thoughts on TerraGrunt, and what do you think Terraform now solves the problem that TerraGrunt was built to solve? Or basically, what problems does Terraform natively solve now that TerraGrunt originally was required for?
So I think that, so I used to use TerraGrunt back, I think when Terraform was in zero ten, something like that. Yep. And it did solve a lot of problems in kind of like managing that state and handling some things that made sense. I feel like personally, you know, like I still feel like there are some good use cases. That's a question I ask people that use TerraGrunt is like, where do you see it really shine, and kind of getting an idea on that front. Personally, being able to use depends on for modules, being able to kind of layer everything after the changes that were introduced in 0.12, 0.13, 0.14, custom validation, things like that. I feel like most of, like 99% of my use cases where I would use TerraGrunt went away in just kind of core changes to the language. And so I am curious to hear where people are like, oh, it still doesn't do this thing, or I prefer this kind of operation with it. Because that's, I just kind of want to expand my understanding there. I feel like there's a lot more that I have to grow in kind of understanding that. Personally, I love using vanilla Terraform, but I am again biased, you know, working for HashiCorp.
I guess, but and we get by CloudPos. We haven't used TerraGrunt ever in an engagement, but I guess the cases that still stand out from my perspective that it solves that I like is automatic backend creation for S3. However, then like, wait, why are you using this other tool to create your bucket? That should be managed in Terraform, and that's why we have a Terraform module to manage it. The other one would be dryness. Like I think it's a real bummer that you can't really have remote root modules out of the box with Terraform. You can run this kind of hacky thing, Terraform and init-from module, but I don't think that's fully baked in its implementation. So people complain about the dryness there. And then this DAG problem that Matt Gowey brought up, that people use it to kind of, in a poor man's way, express the relationship between modules in a very explicit way, but not a policy-driven way. And I think where we need to move to is a policy-driven approach that some of the taco providers provide. All right, well, we are out of time for today. Taylor, it was sweet having you on the show. I think we're gonna have you on pretty soon again, talk more about some other HashiCorp products that I'd like to learn about. I really wanna learn about Boundary. I really want to learn about Nomad. I have massive FOMO about both of these. We don't yet have Cloud Posse modules on them. So I do want to get more personal introduction to them. Taylor has shared some links with me. So everyone go check these out. HashiCorp has their own office hours. You better not stop coming to Cloud Posse's office hours, but yeah, there it is. We were first. Then HashiCast is their syndicated podcast, probably with a lot of their content repurposed there. And HashiTalks Build. I'm not actually sure what is HashiTalk Build.
So that one I'm really excited about. We have these HashiTalks events where we'll focus on, you know, a country and, you know, a continent, like maybe Antarctica. We haven't had that one just yet, but, you know, never say never. might service like seven people there, but that'll be fun to work on. HashiTalks Build is focused on the builders in the community. So we've talked a lot about using Terraform, but building a provider, what is it, you know, or what does that look like? How can I do that? And kind of some deeper elements of working with the HashiCorp tools and just kind of, you know, deeper takes on that. So that's going to be a really fun event that's going to be coming out a little bit later this summer, but to absolutely encourage you to take a look at that. If you have a CFP you want to submit as well, be our guest. It'd be a lot of fun to have you.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I'd like to participate in that, I think. And so if you want to share this recording with some friends or any of our other past sessions of Office Hours, you can head over to youtube.com/C/CloudPosse. We're going to post a video recording of this session to the YouTube channel in a few hours, as well as cut it up into some interesting segments. So on our YouTube channel, you'll also find the Cloud Posse Explains series, where we cut up these segments into interesting outtakes that you can share and kind of enroll the rest of your team in this sweet ops way. Other actions you might want to take is subscribe to our Slack team if you haven't already. We got over 4,000 pretty active members there. You go to slack.cloudposse.com, you will get an invitation and you'll be able to join our team right away. If you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you go to newsletter@cloudposse.com, as well as you can register for our next office hours by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Well, I look forward to meeting everyone next week, same time, same place. Have a great rest of your week. Thanks again, Taylor.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good one.
Thank you.